where we, you know, we're monitoring our training right now, but we're leaning towards the runner in the Oaks, and it would be fun. You know, we passed the Derby last year with Quip, but maybe this year we can having her running in the Oaks, and you know, we feel very lucky, I guess.
Well, and we saw her at the weekend of, oh my gosh, of Risen Star, right? I mean, in the she didn't run well in the Rachel.
Yeah, that was the first race of the layoff. I have no idea what happened, to be honest. No clue.
That can happen.
So, yeah, you know, so we can regroup after that race, and we got a pretty good pattern of Breeze in Payson. She was showing us the race was, even if she didn't run any good, the race was good for her, and we decided to go back. We went back somewhere where she won by 10 a grade 2 last year, so the fact we went back to Aqueduct and Malana 8, and Philly run our best race in our life, and got enough point to be in. So, you know, looks like she's, if it's the same than last year, if she gets better after every race, we hope to be sitting on our best effort in 3 weeks from now, 2 weeks from now.
Well, and you know, that storyline, I'd forgotten about that storyline with Positive Spirit, who had won the Demoiselle, and then you came back, and we also saw in the Wood too. Who was it that came back to that came back, did the exact same thing, that had run well at two among the boys, and had the same kind of thing where, you know, things hadn't been going well and basically righted the ship. It was Jack Sisterson came back with his filly and to try to take advantage and get back on the surface. And so the second in the Gazelle behind Always Shopping, and just looking at the Oaks points, and yeah, you're safely in at 13 with 50 points. So you're in great shape. So this is the Mike Ryan filly. Nice. Positive,
yeah, she's a
spirit.
Nice filly. You know, she's a three quarter sister of Always Dreaming. So, you know, very well bred, already a stakes winner, and it would be nice to get her in a trifecta of a grade one. It's a you know, with that kind of pedigree, it's a, you know, that's what we try to do. We're lucky enough to work with some people bred good horses, and we try to find some value and to try to maximize the value, I would say, and so it's been pretty fun.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, the horse, for those that didn't hear it clearly, Preamble is the 3-for-3 Windstar China Horse Club SF, the Peter Callahan bred colt out of Beautician, the nice filly that Kenny McPeak campaigned. She's a Spitestown, he's a Spitestown, we'll look for him on the sprint scene, which is really shaping up nicely. And you've been kind of spoon-feeding him a little, taking your time.
Well, yeah, the horse was a little bit on the small size last year, and after he won the second time in Kinlong, number came back very fast. And we can all sit down and have a talk about future for him. And nobody really see any two-turn in him, you know, when you start to categorize us as a sprinter, you, as a 2 year old, you don't have many options. You kind of have to wait more around June, July, August, and you know, it's not as the program is not as strong as when you have a two-turn horse. So you know, we just decide to give him some time, and same the time did good to him, and then we got him back in a winner circle of the layoff, and then hopefully he's going to take us where we're planning to go, you know.
Well, and there's also, you know, looking at what Beautician has been doing, she's got a American Pharoah 2-year-old, and then she's got a Nyquist yearling as well. So taking advantage of some of the first crop types, and we'll watch for more. She was a nice horse beautician, and Preamble obviously heading toward Stakes Company as well. Well, Rudy, you're in great shape here as the spring unfolds. Quip comes back and adds another graded stake win to his resume, and Talk Viv to me ready for the Umana on Oaks Derby weekend, and positive spirit in the Oaks. So obviously we'll be talking to you plenty this year.
Well, I mean, the winter has been a little quiet for us because we don't have enough horses to be able to run winter and the full season, so we can focus on April to November, and every horse in the barn the most value we can, and then it's all about winning races, I guess. So that's what we work out for.
Well, and the clearly, very carefully plotted with these horses, taking your time, and with that client list, Team Valor and the Windstar team, and it's a great, it's a great endorsement for you. I would be doing a disservice to Rudy if I didn't bring up the scene from yesterday, and along with the rest of the world, watched in just horror and sadness at the fire at Notre Dame. As a Frenchman, I'm sure, like the rest of countrymen, are just it was so upsetting to watch yesterday. I'm really sorry for. I know what it seems to mean to everybody in France.
It's a shame. I mean, I think it's been Capital Association was trying to renew that, the Notre Dame for a couple of years, and they were having a hard time to be able to collect funds to be able to try to keep it in good shape. And then, of course, what happened yesterday, I'm pretty sure. I think I actually read already on some of the French news, a lot of rich, very wealthy people in France, I think, are putting a group together, and I can see them and see the French government try to rebuild and try to keep that Notre Dame back on the
sure.
It's definitely sad, and I guess it can shake a lot of people around the world, and I'm sure they're going to try to save it at one point.
No, they did. It's a symbol, a great symbol, obviously, of French resistance. You think about the war, both wars, and luckily, I mean, amazing. The stuff that I've read has been remarkable, including many of the. Of the artworks and some of the statuary had all been the statues taken down from the spire 4 days ago as they were doing their work, and a lot of the most important pieces of art and things had been moved anyway. It as devastating as it is, it feels like it'll give rise to a new Notre Dame, but it was a jarring scene.
It was definitely not fun to watch.
Rudy, it was also fun to watch Quip win the Oaklawn handicap for you. Certainly a lot of positives coming out of the weekend, and congratulations to you and Team Valor, and to Windstar and SF and China Horse Club, and we'll look forward to Derby Oaks weekend.
Well, we will do the same. We're gonna look forward for that weekend too. So thank you for having me, and I guess we'll be in touch.
Absolutely, we'll talk soon. You can follow Rudolf Brissett at Twitter, Brissett Rudolph is the address, and keep tabs on his horses. He's done such a great job, emerging with steady success, and Quip kind of the breakthrough horse, and as you can see, does a great job managing him. We'll take a timeout here, top of the hour upon us, hour three, and we'll come back and talk to Bill Downs, the voice of Indiana Grand. We'll get ready for their season, which kicks off this afternoon, just about 3 hours from now. Indiana, back on your wagering menu. We'll talk about what to watch for. We got a couple of hints from Brad Cox earlier, last year's second leading trainer at Indiana Grand, and Bill Downs next. Stay with us.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the song on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood fraternities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through HorseBills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the HorseBills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. HorseBills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
We're back at the races, just about 5 minutes after hour three, the top, and absolutely a pleasure to get the voice of Indiana Grand, Bill Downs, joining us just hours away from the start of Indiana Grand's season, 2:15 post Eastern time. And Bill, welcome, and happy IG.
Yes, thank you so much, Steve. Good morning, and happy opening day. And weather-wise, I don't think we could draw up a better weather day. It's going to be about 73 degrees for the high, and looks like a mostly sunny sky. So very, very happy considering The weather in Indiana this winter has been very, very cold and very, very a lot of rain, a lot of snow. And so the fact that we get a day in the 70s to start off our 2019 meet is very welcome.
Well, and certainly the you know, the place on the calendar, a good fit, and with the racing at Keeneland and, you know, Churchill to follow in another 10 days, the, you know, the spot that Indiana Grand and Thoroughbred Racing in Indiana holds, you know, really is taking an important position. It may be at the expense, frankly, of racing in Illinois, but you've attracted, you know, over the last several years, you continue to attract top horsemen. We talked to Brad Cox earlier this morning, and I took the opportunity to talk to Brad. You know, last year, second leading trainer, Tom Amos, has been perennially successful at Indiana. And, of course, the Lowers, who utilize the Indiana Bred program in addition to, you know, their there are other horses. Let's talk a little bit about what people should be looking for and get a feel for Indiana Grand 2019.
Sure. Trainer-wise, you mentioned Amos. You mentioned Brad Cox. Amos was tied for leading trainer last year with Gennaro Garcia, who likes to run in the wintertime at the Oaklawn Park. And Gennaro runs plenty of horses. He probably leads the entry box in terms of the number of entries every racing season. So he, by just pure volume, does quite well. Amos and Brad Cox are a little bit more higher percentage trainers. They kind of pick their spots. They probably run about half the number that Gennaro Garcia does at Indiana Grand during a racing season. You mentioned the Indiana-based trainers that are like Mike Lauer, who has a lot of Indiana bred. Marvin Johnson's another gentleman that does quite well with the Indiana bred. Who's not really that well known outside of the Midwest. He mentioned a Chicago trainer, used to be a Chicago trainer, now has a lot of horses here at Indiana Grand, Tony Granite. John Horan is another guy who does all right here at Indiana Grand. And then, you know, even guys like Mike Maker will ship horses on occasion down here to the Hoosier State. So, you know, you get a little bit of everything. You got guys and women who are running here all the time. Then you get the Kentucky-based trainers who come up here on occasion, and or they support the program even on non-Kentucky race days as well. So you get a real good mix of different type of horses from all over the place, especially early on in the meet.
Well, and Dr. Bob Gorham sends yes. out a steady parade, and of course, a Michigan institution, and with the demise of racing in Michigan, Dr. Gorham has found, you know, a couple different places. You'll see him turn up in the Mid-Atlantic and Presque Isle, and last year, 162 starters, and 149 starters. And, I mean, he is one of the old school type trainers. You mentioned Tony Granitz, you know. 15%, you know, the classic horsemen that, you know, that know how to win. And, you know, I asked Brad about, you know, aggressive spotting as well, Bill. And he says that, you know, they're aggressive. They'll win and they'll, you know, sometimes they'll drop and they'll, in some cases, they're daring people to take horses. Yep. But that's, you know, that's part of the decision making process. You know, you know, the claiming game really helps. Beginning of a meet like this with horses at Keeneland and at Churchill, you know, I do see that the Indiana Bred program, you know, well represented in the first few cards.
Yes, and you mentioned Brad Cox. Brad Cox debuted Monomoy Girl right here at Indiana Grand.
Yep.
A little trivia question I always like to throw out there to some people. So you never know what you're going to get with Brad Cox. You know, he has so many horses, he has to run them somewhere, so sometimes he runs them up here, and, you know, there are horses, plenty of horses that get you know, Brad Cox horses get hammered at the betting windows here at Indiana Grand. You know, but sometimes he'll throw a runner, a really, really good runner like a Monomoy Girl will make their debut here in the Hoosier State. His horses, Amos horses, they do get hammered. If you can beat an Amos or Brad Cox horse, you'll be handsomely rewarded with probably, obviously, a long shot of sorts.
Let's take a look too at the riding colony, and again, you're looking at some names that people see, whether it's at Oaklawn or you see it, and I don't want to call it the B circuit, but Marcelino Pedroza, who had a terrific meet last year to lead in terms of money won, and Rodney Prescott, excellent journeyman. Deshaun Parker, whose career has really been terrific. I mean, starting in West Virginia, and he's kind of expanded his horizons. Fernando de la Cruz, he wins plenty. Alex Canciari, a guy we respect in the irons. Those are among the some of the top names. Santo Sanger as well.
Yes, you mentioned Ronnie Prescott. Prescott's been in Indiana forever. I had an awesome meet last year. Him and Parker are two really established veterans. One of my favorite jockeys, Fernando de la Cruz, likes to spend the winter down at the Tampa Bay Downs lots of times. Parker, I believe, was at Sam Houston during the winter time. I think Prescott deals with Turfway during the cold months. But I'll give you a new name who I see in the jockeys listed for the first couple of days, Luan Machado, who I believe was the leading rider of the winter meet at Turfway Park. Brazilian, young guy, not an apprentice, but Machado, I think, is going to have a pretty good meet here. Seems to be on plenty of horses, and if he can establish some relationships, I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be in the top five or six for sure here at Indiana Grand. You mentioned Marcelino Pedroza. I didn't see his name in the first couple of days of entries. I know he was riding down at the fairground. I saw him on a couple horses at Keeneland, didn't have a winner or anything. So it's been interesting to see where Pedroza lands in 2019, if he's planning on coming here or trying to stick on the Kentucky circuit. I'm sure we'll see him at some point, because a lot of times the Kentucky based jockeys on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, when it's not Derby week, they tend to show up here every now and then, and that's always something you always have to put into your handicapping equation. When the Kentucky jockeys decide to make the drive up I-65 for a couple of hours, they're not doing it for their health, they're doing it to win races, and that added emphasis always has to be put on when those people show up here at Indiana Grand on a Tuesday or Wednesday.
Well, and I certainly have got to mention that Perry Utes is riding at least these first couple of days. And he's got one mount today, Rattle My Chain in the second, and then he's riding for Billy Connolly and Ron Harrison tomorrow. And he's just unbelievable. He's just ageless.
Yes, I remember I called the Old River Downs back in the day, I think it was 2003 and 2004, and Perry was awesome back then, and he's still awesome. I mean, it's just incredible how he's able to continue to ride at such a high level. I'm just looking at his stats. I think his first year of riding was in 1976. I don't know if Equivace goes farther back than that, but that's what I'm just looking at right now, and it's just incredible the amount of horses he has ridden over the years. He's ridden over 50,000 horses in his career, and over 7,000 wins. Of course, that got that 7,000 plateau not too long ago. And he's still based at Belterra. But when Belterra starts, he tends to stay down at Belterra. Every now and then, he'll show up here. But until Belterra starts, he'll be on a couple a day for sure.
Let's give everybody the lay of the land, too, Bill. Bill Downs with us from Indiana Grand. He's going to join us every couple of weeks or so for the season. And you mentioned the Tuesday, Wednesday. Lay out the racing schedule for the season.
Sure. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, first post will be at 2:15 p.m. We decided to move back post time 10 minutes this year to stay off of certain racetracks when they the bigger racetracks early on seemed like we were getting some always on top of somebody big. So we decided to move it back from 2:05 to 2:15. Then on Saturday evenings, we're going to start at 6:15 p.m. Another thing I should mention is that, we have a turf course, but no turf racing usually for the first couple weeks, probably 2-3 weeks for sure. especially with the cold weather that we've had in central Indiana this winter. We really have not had a proper spring, if you will. So look for the turf racing to start in force, if you will. Around Kentucky Derby time is when you start maybe seeing something that will be written into the condition book for the turf.
Bill Downs joining us. Let's also give everybody the highlights of the season, some of the the big signposts along the way.
Sure. We don't start with stakes racing until late May. But, of course, the highlight of the meet, the Grade 3 Indiana Derby, a mile 16th, $500,000, and Saturday, July 13th. And, you know, they've got the Grade 3 Indiana Oaks also on that today and four other stakes races. So six stakes races on Saturday, July 13th. But normally we run our big stakes races on Wednesdays. Wednesdays is kind of like the king at Indiana Grand. It's our highest handle date of the week. So we tend to put a lot of really good races. You know, a lot of times we get those Kentucky-based jockeys to also spice up our card. So Wednesdays is usually the highlight of every racing week. I will mention also later in the meet the Caesars Stakes. We're bought by Caesars Entertainment the last year, and they have a big stakes race on Wednesday, September the 4th, and also the Indiana Grand Stakes for three-year-old fillies, the Caesars Stakes for three-year-old colts and geldings, $200,000. Both races are a mile on the turf. That kind of anchors our late last half of the meets in terms of highlights. And, of course, there's lots of Indiana-bred stakes races throughout the season, and they're all worth over $100,000 or more. So they're not running for peanuts by any means.
And you know, we're focusing, obviously, on thoroughbreds, but there's also the quarter horses.
Yeah. We have 120 race dates here at Indiana Grand, and then six of the race dates are for only quarter horses. And we run those six race dates on the Saturday evenings. Sprinkled throughout the racing season, there'll be an all quarter horse card at Indiana Grand, and they've got all sorts of stakes races as well. So therefore, it is the quarter horses, they get to kind of like a different audience, especially on track. It's amazing how you get it. There's just a different group of people that love the quarter horses that will show up when we run our all quarter horse nights. And of course, during pretty much 90% of the card at Indiana Grand, there'll be a quarter horse race or two at the end of the card. Today, we've got races 9 and 10 will be for the quarter horses. And then I know tomorrow, the last race is for the quarter horses. So we kind of mix quarter horses with the thoroughbreds, and the quarter horses are at the end of the card. But yeah, there are definitely a facet of the Indiana Grand racing program.
You know, and I've got to fold in your career too, because you've been in any number of locales over the years, and you've also filled in some high profile spots. How much quarter horse experience did you have before calling these in Indiana?
Well, my first professional job was at Arapahoe Park in outside of Denver, Colorado. So not only did I call the thoroughbreds and quarter horses, I got to call the Arabians.
Hey, Arabians, yeah.
Yeah. And then when I was at Ellis Park, now this is just getting a little silly, but I also got to call, the Ellis Park, they'll do everything. They got they'll race for fun, the camels and ostriches and the wiener dogs. So I've probably called a few different breeds over the years. I've been at, I mentioned Arapahoe Park, Beulah Park forever. I was in central Ohio and in Columbus. I was at Ellis Park, was the first announcer at Presque Isle Downs. You mentioned getting to fill in. I got to fill in for Larry Colmes when he was, before he got the NYRA job, he was at Churchill Downs, but he was also the NBC announcer, so they needed a fill in there. So I was a fill in at Churchill Downs, even during Kentucky Derby week. That was a thrill as well. So, yeah, I've been in a lot of different places, but this is year number 7 here at Indiana Grand. I've been here at Indiana Grand since 2013. And it's probably the best decision I ever made coming here. I've been treated quite well, and I love the racing. And it's really nice when the racing starts, when it gets better over the years. And that's what happened here at Indiana Grand.
Well, and you know, the state has the breeding fund and the promotion fund, and there's been a steady, you know, there really has been a steady improvement. I talk most regularly on handicapping fronts with Marcus Hirsch over the years, who covers Indiana for the DRF, and that, you know, even back to before this. The flip-flop of how Indiana, the whole thing with Hoosier Downs and the with the harness horses and you know, the way things, you know, kind of settled in with Indiana Grand taking over the flat. And we should tell everybody too that might not have ever traveled Indiana, but Shelbyville. Let's get that in. Let's let everybody know that they got to go to Shelbyville to visit Indiana Grand. And this harkens back, Bill, to my days in Cincinnati for Cannon Mills and having to, you know, to travel the roads and from Columbus to Indianapolis and some of the straightest, most sleep-inducing highways between big cities, and that those are some of the toughest drives going to and from Chicago. You know, from Louisville to Chicago, it's a bleary-eyed trip.
Yep, it definitely is. There's not much. There's not many big cities on the way besides Indianapolis from Louisville to Chicago. But yes, Shelbyville is located like about 15 miles or so outside of the Indianapolis city proper. It's on the way to Cincinnati. You can kind of cut over as well. We're like about 2 hours north of Churchill Downs. Most of the drive is on I-65 there. So it is convenient for, you know, even Ohio-based trainers at Belterra on occasion will ship over to Indiana Grand. And for the Kentucky-based contingent, as you can see or hear, that it's not that far away. So it is convenient, and even on occasion to get some of the Chicago-based trainers will ship down as well.
And you're from Chicago, are you not originally?
Yes, I am. I was born and bred in Chicago. I lived there up until I got out into the horse racing world. I went to Marquette University up in Milwaukee.
Oh, nice.
But yes, I am a Chicago guy, even though my sports teams are not necessarily all Chicago.
Well, we want that. Listen, I can identify with that, having lived almost everywhere around North America, and you switch allegiances as you go. Let's take a look at the action, a couple of spots maybe today and tomorrow, and you know, the feature today. There's quite a bit of, as I said, Indiana bred racing, but the Open Company First Level Allowance, the optional claiming 25 group going a mile, the seventh is the feature. You got some thoughts in this?
Absolutely. There are a few scratches in the race. Two of them are big long shots. The two Hold On Angel and the 11 I Skipper. Now the big scratch is the three horse Mono, who was the morning line favorite from the Amos barn. So this is going to kind of depress some of the prices when you scratch a 5-2 shot from the morning line. All the other contenders are going to come down quite a bit. There are a couple of horses in the race that I'm kind of looking at. The 8 horse Glad To Be Here came off the shelf at Oaklawn Park, ran a couple of tough 140 claimer and a one optional claiming race, two other than. And I just think that this group is much easier than his last race, third race off the layup. But the key handicapping angle for Glad To Be Here is the horse for course angle. 3-for-4 lifetime over the Indiana Grand Dirt. Yeah, third race off the layup. Cipriano Contreras is a trainer that kind of we didn't mention, but he had a pretty good meet here at Indiana Grand last year. This horse can show some speed. He has a bit of an outside post, even with a couple scratches to the inside. So it'll be interesting to see if Santos Danger can get him close to the lead going into that first turn. But Glad To Be Here is an interesting horse. And then the Indiana Bred taking on Open Company, the 9-horse Uphold. Last two races have been on the turf at Tampa Bay Downs. They tried the blinkers last time out, so they obviously weren't happy with something in that race two starts back at Tampa on January 18th. This gelding was really got good last year here at Indiana Grand, almost won The Gus Grissom Stakes, $100,000 stakes race, and almost beat Open Company in that, our older horses, excuse me, in that race. So that was a really strong performance. He's kind of tailed off, but I think getting back to the dirt, back here at Indiana Grand, a surface that he knows well, he's another one that could surprise. I don't think we'll get 8-1 now with the scratch of Mono, but I think he won't be a favorite. So Uphold might be one to throw into exotic wagers.
I also thought, and you hit the highlights, definitely, I thought Wagon Boss had a bit of a look in here, too, to get a nice stalking trip and getting back on the dirt. And Malcolm Franklin for Randy Klopp should be able to draft off the speed in here. And, you know, Sea Admiral down inside, you know, certainly a candidate to set the pace. I suppose that Ladies' Weekend for Larry Demerit, coming back to him, might show some speed as well. I just don't know. I was interested in Uphold at first too, but with I don't know if there's enough pace for Uphold to close into. So I Wagon Boss 5-1. I'm going to definitely use.
Yeah, Wagon Boss. It just was noted in the trouble lines. Lots of trouble at the start. If you can get off to a decent start, I think it'll be all right. He's run at Indiana Grand over the years, mostly on turf. Right. He does have a couple of wins on a dry main track, so that should be all right for a Wagon Boss. Malcolm Franklin is another gentleman that's ridden here at Indiana Grand for many, many years, and he was hurt last year. And I know he was like second at the Turfway Park, I think, for the winter meet. So therefore, it's good to see Malcolm Franklin back and riding in top form. You mentioned Sea Admiral. I had to take a look at the start of that race on March the 9th. You know, sometimes trouble lines are, you know, they'll mention anything. Sometimes the trouble lines are a little more severe than it actually looks at. But I think they got it right. Reared at the start, completely blew the start, and he's a speed horse. And he has an inside post. So, Steve, you mentioned that you like Ladies' Weekend to show speed. I think Sea Admiral, I don't think they're going to give up the inside and the rail going into that first turn. So I think the races are going to probably go through Sea Admiral, who should still be a pretty good price in the race. But still, even though Mono did scratch, I do think there's a lot of contenders in our featured race today on opening day, that seventh race, an entry-level allowance optional claiming race.
Bill Downs with us from Indiana Grand that kicks off their season. And, Bill, let's give everybody also a look at the betting menu and what their choices are when it comes to their wagering.
Well, I'm always a fan of the pick fours. That's always my big thing. And we usually run two pick fours per day. The first one starts on the second race, and the late pick four starts on the fifth race. Trifectas, superfectas are always available as long as there's, you know, X number of horses per race. We do have rolling daily doubles here at Indiana Grand and rolling pick threes as well. I know the pick fours, 50 cents is the minimum. We do have a pick six. Every now and then, and our pick six is just a normal pick six. And it's not a carryover or a jackpot type of thing. And, you know, it doesn't get that much. But every now and then, once it starts getting closer, you know, over at least $5,000, that's when, you know, handicappers start to maybe zero in a little bit because it's not big enough where the big syndicates are going to attack it. So, therefore, you can it's a dollar minimum as well. So you can put together a ticket, and get some coverage for a decent price. So that pick six starts on race number three every day. It's not like something to be looking at today because obviously it's first day and it doesn't get the amount.
Sure.
It just kind of it gradually builds, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, maybe we take a look at the pick six today because it does have a carryover and some more value if you definitely like the sequence.
Well, and it's a dollar pick six, so it kind of bridges the gap. You know, these days with what's happened with the. You know, for pick six players,
yep.
New York is really the last the last outpost for a true $2 pick six. But the dollar pick six it will be approachable. We'll watch for the carryover to build. You also run a pick five that starts with the opener, right?
That was something we did last year. We instituted the pick five. And that's when it gets really fun, because you get in a long shot or two, and then all of a sudden you get the carryover. And there was a couple times last year where it was kind of like the perfect storm where, we'll get a carryover or two, and then we'll have on a Wednesday, which is like our big day, and people come out in droves even on midweek. And we had a couple of really huge pick five carryovers last year, and so that's another bet to take a look at. And it's a 50-cent minimum pick five, if I remember from last year, and I'm double checking. Yes, it is. Thank you, Steve. Every first race we kick off with the 50-cent pick five.
Well, and you know, the positioning, timing wise, whether it's Saturday nights or whether it's, you know, the 2 o'clock Eastern start, it's well positioned to, you know, kind of feather into whatever racetracks you like to play. And you know, being on Tuesday with Tampa, well, Tampa's not exactly winding down, but Tampa for many years had the Tuesday place on the calendar, and it was one of our favorite. Tampa Tuesday was one of our favorite things, so we can get ready for Indiana Tuesday. And you know, you mentioned the Gus Grissom, and I do have to take a second, because I'm sure, I don't know if I've ever, I guess I've mentioned this probably, you've got so many stakes that are named for sons and daughters of Indiana, and it that includes the A.J. Foyt and the Florence Henderson, the Gus Grissom, and it always kind of makes me smile when it's time for these, the Mary Holman George, whose family owns the Brickyard, and so forth, the William Henry Harrison, and in fact, if you're going to go, I'm going to give everybody a crazy place to visit. For those that get a chance to go to Indiana, stop at Tippecanoe County. And for those that have any history in their background, Tippecanoe and Tyler too, and you can stop. There's a monument. This is one of the things on the highway. I'm eligible when I'm driving highways, Bill, to stop at things like this. And there's a national park. Pretty funny, and I remember stopping there when I was a salesman working Indiana, and also when Valpo got hot, that's north of here, but when right. Valparaiso came onto the scene in the NCAAs, one day I saw the sign for to get off the highway for Valparaiso, and I drove down to Valparaiso to see the campus just so I could say I'd seen it.
It's not the biggest thing. I actually went there for a basketball game one time when Marquette, my alma mater, played Valparaiso in the middle of winter in a huge snowstorm when I was still in Ohio, and I don't even know how I got back because it was snowing that much, but I had to go see the alma mater because they were, a few hours away from where I was at in Columbus, Ohio.
I love it. Well, we will give everybody, as we visit, we'll give them plenty of places, the trip up to Indianapolis, if you're going to do that, you're going to make a stop at Shapiro's, the great kosher cafeteria that is as good as anywhere in the country. Shapiro's one of my favorite places.
Yes, no doubt. I've had that a few times.
Attaboy. Bill Downs. Bill, everybody, let's make sure everybody is following you and following all the appropriate parties for information. And that includes, of course, on Twitter. And I'm going to forget now right away what you're at.
Oh, don't worry. I got it for you.
Right? Bill Downs 1.
Bill Downs 1.
There you go.
All, obviously one word, but Downs spelled D-O-W-N-E-S. You'll see if you find me, I have my, whatever you want to call it, glamour shot with, and then some Indiana Grand a picture above that. But yeah, I'm very active on Twitter, Steve. Now that Indiana Grand is the start, you'll get, mostly horse racing, but I'm a big sports guy. I'm all over the place. I go to a lot of Indiana Pacer games. You name it. If I'm at a sporting event, I'll usually tweet out a picture, and I'm a pretty big fan of all sports. Also, Rachel McLaughlin, at Racing Rachel. She tweets all sorts of stuff, and I know she's got some things planned and getting some more visuals up on her page, as well as the Indiana Grand page as well. But so if you want to follow me on Twitter, @BillDowns1 on Twitter.
Excellent. And for Indiana Grand itself, there's a couple of different accounts. IG Racecourse is the one you want for the racetrack. And you can follow the casino, too, I imagine. But IG Racecourse, opening day, just hours away. And I'm glad you mentioned Rachel McLaughlin as well. And I appreciate, Bill, this opportunity to give everybody a chance to focus in on Indiana as the season starts. And we'll hit the highlights every couple of weeks.
You got it.
Bill Downs, folks, and Indiana Grand, 2:15, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, and then the Saturday evening cards as well. And we'll give you some ideas. We'll do some playing at Indiana Grand starting today. Let's take a break. Probably the last of the morning. We'll come back and visit with Jeremy Plonk, HorsePlayerNow.com. Countdown to the crown, and now the countdown is on for real with all the prep season behind us. Jeremy Plonk to fill out this busy Tuesday.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet, and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from EchoBase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. That was fun. A great way to introduce. I hope for those that haven't played Indiana, you'll take a look. And we're going to visit with Bill regularly and keep tabs on their season as it gets underway. And I you're like me, right? You get the biggest kick out of those Indiana stakes, like the Florence Henderson, the Mrs. Brady, and A.J. Foyt. And, of course, A.J. Owns horses. And I'm sure that that's in September, that race card, that weekend. That's the weekend that they're going to run the Caesars as well. Kind of a turf festival day And if you want to be there for Derby Oaks, July 13th is the Indiana Derby and Oaks card. So let me also, as we do this, let me give you another, maybe a different number, Joanne. Let me try to, I don't know which one I gave you, because Jeremy's got a couple, all right? So let me give you this one, yeah. And if Jeremy, if you're listening, maybe call the studio. No, I here, let's try this instead. Yeah, I know that's the home number. Try this. That's a mobile, and then here I'll even give you what might be a desk number for him as well. All right, you'll, because something tells me that Jeremy's got that, like Johnny D has got like a bunker, you know, where where there's, you know, all the reference materials that he uses. I mean, Jeremy's got to have, he has to have as extensive a library of things like American Racing Manual and chart books and everything else in his long running job as the statistician, you know, basically building the, you know, the arsenal of info at the fingertips of the broadcasters and ABC and NBC over the years. And I'm going to ask him about that. And, you know, speaking of which, I've seen some wonderful photographs that people have been putting up of either inscriptions by Steve Davidowitz in books that when they bought, when they had a chance to meet Steve, or brought the books when he was doing seminars. I've got two myself. I've got, you know, best and worst of thoroughbred racing. One that I remember him bringing when we were doing the show at the barbecue. So we were still an afternoon show. And, I think that probably was Benning Thoroughbreds for the 21st century, if I had to guess. And, I remember him inscribing it. And, people have been putting pictures on, Twitter of, you know, of their handicapping library. And it's pretty amazing when you see, you know, everybody. I should do the same. Mine are actually scattered in a couple of different places, but, Jeremy Plonk ready for us now. And Jeremy, I was just riffing while we chased you down. How big is your collection of racing reference materials?
It's smaller than you'd think, because everything is turned electronic, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot too is I was an intern and got into this game 1993, 1994. So I did a lot of like Xeroxing and things like that, because I was in places in Kentucky at the time that had these great assets. Historians like Jim Bolas were alive back then and kind of took me under his wing and showed me a lot of his materials. So as a young guy without a lot of money when I was getting into the game, you know, I've got a ton of Xerox printed hard copy stuff in that respect. I think the Champions book is one of the great, the past performances of all the different champion horses that the DRF Press put out, you know, about a decade ago. I think that's one of the great reference books. Most of it's electronic now, though, to be honest with you. So, maybe if I came down the pike 20 years, the people who were around in the 70s, you know, I mean, I was watching races in the 70s as a young child, but, you know, not in it. So, you know, like 84, 85 is when I really started getting serious as a teenager. In really playing the races a lot and collecting information. So I think the people in the 70s have a lot more of a written hardback form of racing in the way that they learned the game. And I probably came along, not certainly in this modern generation where everything's touchscreen and PDF download, but somewhere in between. So I kind of fall in the middle of that.
I thought to ask, because we were talking about Steve Davidowitz, and so many people are putting up pictures of either their books that Steve signed for them, or in some cases their whole handicapping library, and it's really kind of cool. Did you add that, which leads me to a question? Did you have any dealings with Steve. I think we had him on Night School, did we not?
Yeah, we did. I was editor of Horse Player Magazine with Tom Quigley when Steve executive columnist. He and I did not have a good relationship, but I certainly would not besmirch anybody in passing. And I know he has a long legion of fans, but he didn't get along with me. And, you know, we really had a rocky time. I mean, he was the executive columnist, you know, our back page columnist, and we had a falling out. So, you know, I mean, but again, God bless him, and I hope that he and his family, you know, get through a difficult time. But he and I were not friends.
Well, people can hear me kind of smiling and laughing because you're not. There's going to be plenty. There's plenty of people, widespread appreciation for his talent and his, you know, his abilities with as a writer and as a handicapper and a player. He was a handful. He was a handful to get along with.
And I'll say this too, and this is not a knock on him individually or anything like that. So I don't want anybody to take it wrong, but when you meet somebody at their point in their career is very important, because, like, I got to know Joe Hirsch at the end of his career, and he wasn't the Joe Hirsch that everybody knew, like, at the beginning, you know? So if you met somebody when they were in their 60s or 70s, you have a much different perception of them than, say, maybe if you knew them from their early days and going up all the way through. On the converse, if they meet you at the first part of your career, there can be a lack of respect there, too, you know? If you're in your 30s and that person's in their 60s and suddenly you're in a peer position, you may not get the respect in return because they kind of look at you and say, hey, I've been doing this since you were in diapers, you know? So I think when you meet somebody in life really has a big difference on that person that you met, because you didn't meet the 30-year-old, you met the 60-year-old, and that can really change things a lot. And so people shouldn't be judged necessarily on, you know, oh, I have this opinion of them and you have this opinion of somebody, because you may have met at completely different times in life, and hey, people change, and that's no question about it.
I think it's a very even-handed assessment. I appreciate it. Jeremy, we're through the prep season, and countdown to the crown now turns its attention to the 20 horses that, as of now, have made the Derby gate, assuming everybody goes forward. Knock on wood, we hope nobody faces that ultimate disappointment. But some thoughts about Saturday, the Lexington and the Arkansas Derby.
Well, the Arkansas Derby was as advertised, right? I mean, the horses that were expected to run well put on a great show. We got a very Kentucky Derby-like environment. I've always said that the Arkansas path to the Kentucky Derby is the closest these horses will see before they get to Louisville, because typically they saddle, you know, in a strange place. It's a lot of hubbub. There's people everywhere. It's a long, drawn-out pre-race process. There's 50, 60,000 people in the crowd that are packed in to make it feel like, you know, like Churchill's 100-plus. You know, it's the best environment, I think, for a horse to get ready for the Kentucky Derby. Now we have the X Factor. If they threw in a sloppy track on top of it, which has been Derby Day, right? I mean, if you can't put up a little rain Derby week, you're not gonna handle it this in the past decade. And you know, they threw up the rain there. We had the long gate drawn out process. You know, a long gate load. In fact, I detailed it a bit for some of my race reviews that will be in Countdown this week. But the gate load for the Arkansas Derby was actually much longer than what the gate load for the Kentucky Derby will be. They load 2x1 for the Derby, you know, and in the Arkansas Derby, they just do, you know, one horse at a time. And with the back out, that gate load ended up taking like 245, something like that, which is much longer than we usually see for the gate load for the Kentucky Derby. So, again, all these things you want to see, you know, like, I know everybody just wants to bet the best and fastest horse, but experience matters, you know, and I know we all think these horses with a great horse with two races under their belt can beat anybody if they're a better horse, but there's something for experience. I mean, that's just common life sense, you know, and so if you put horses in environments where they learn something, I think they can get a lot out of it. Anybody coming out of the Arkansas Derby, I think, got a lot out of that race, more than just the mile and an eighth on the racetrack and the competition. There was a lot going on there, and I think it's all positive experience for them because they came through with it, you know. Improbable, you know, what odds did you want him on him when the gate opened, you know? After bulking the load and the delay of the process and backing out and all that kind of stuff, he ran his race despite that, which is great. You know, that's what you want to see So that's a positive. And then the winner, Omaha Beach, was fantastic. You know, I mean, he galloped out much the best of the two, and he's going to the Derby. It's a very, very, very difficult horse to handle. I mean, he's done as much or more than anybody in the crop now. I'd say more.
I won't disagree.
He's a game winner on the nose, yep, on a neutral,
yep,
field, right? These are neutral field victories.
Absolutely.
There was that training time problem, you know, I mean, not time, dates and things like that. Horses missing training time and things like that, what I'm talking about with, mm-hmm, Southern California. They all had that same thing. And the horses he beat on the nose all had those same setbacks. So it's not like he was advantaged and they came to his place. He's,
yep,
on the road twice and beat two Bob Baffert top five horses. When has that happened? That's a phenomenal two-race performance.
Agreed. And yesterday with Mandela, for those, and we'll get the archive up hopefully later today from yesterday too, and the Mandela conversation. If you didn't hear it, I'd listen, and you could tell. I asked them, just a couple of light works between now and Derby, I mean, which is typical what happens for Arkansas Derby exiters. I mean, they're only 19 days away from Derby. And he said, if he's not ready now, he never will be. And you could tell Mandela's just tickled with this situation. He's the ultimate, and Mott too. I mean, the two of them are the ultimate, the horse brings us, we don't bring the horse type.
Yeah, we had this conversation earlier, yeah, in the campaign, you and I,
yep,
in regards to Bill Mott, that it was that Charlie Whittingham feel, don't come back,
yep,
unless you got one that can win. The very first real interviews I did and trip to the Kentucky Derby as a reporter was in 1993, and Hero and Mac Miller. It was the same thing. It was one of the first quotes a trainer ever told me on a major stage was, I'm not coming back here unless I have a horse that can run. And Mac Miller had that with Sea Hero and won the race, a week later after talking to him Derby week. And, that's the kind of scenario you're looking at with Mandela and Mott. And, they just don't bring horses here all the time. Mandela was probably rushed here by the Thoroughbred Corp a couple way back when, where they had Desert Hero, a horse that only had a couple starts under his belt. That was probably owner's excitement to get there. But Soul of the Matter's probably really, I'm trying to think of another one, I don't have it right in front of me, but other than Soul of the Matter in 1994, I don't know that Mandela's really had one that fit in the Derby, that was like a legitimate contender that could win this thing.
Right.
And so you're going back a long ways there, and that's 25 years now. So he spans my career, basically, in the industry almost with that gap. But this is what, this was Mac Miller. This was Charlie Whittingham. And that's not a knock on him at all. He hasn't had horses like that that were brought along to be, colts on the dirt that were quick developers, and he's not one to push one. So, but this horse, Omaha, Richard Mandela can win the Kentucky Derby. I know I'm a stats geek and things like that. And you can say, with his record in the Triple Crown, blah, blah, blah. Screw that. I mean, this horse is good enough, and Richard Mandela is five times the horseman of probably half the guys starting horses in the Kentucky Derby. He absolutely can and may win the Derby.
One of the funnier lines when I asked him, he hasn't been there in 15 years. Action this day was sixth.
Okay, he had a good one there, right?
And Minister Eric, who actually was a nice horse, was 16th. But I said, you haven't been in 15 years. I said, what would you do differently, or what have you done differently? And he said, I've watched Baffert. I'm watching Baffert. I've learned. It's actually one of the from the Breeders' Cup a couple of years ago when I stayed over, and just the three of us actually in the pathway underneath the stands where I had to broadcast that day, and one of the really special moments that we've ever had on the show when Baffert was following Mandela, Mandela had won with Beholder, and Baffert had won. What did he? I'm trying to think of. He'd won a couple of things, I think, and that might have been Byron's year. I can't remember now. Mm. But Mandela said some things about Baffert that were just, because there was a period when the two of them were not friendly, and that's changed, and Mandela said he's the best. He's the best he's ever seen, referring to Baffert. And it's interesting that he's in this position, and there's no doubt that beating Baffert on the square, with beating the 2-year-old champ and beating the the potential major player and an improbable, it would be a tremendous story. Either him and Mott are. It would be amazing. It's amazing how many Hall of Famers have gotten to Churchill. I think I counted up 7 horses represented by Hall of Fame trainers.
I don't like to do this because I usually like to keep the good stuff for the column, but this is one I'm going to share with you. Super High Five, top 5 finishers in the Arkansas Derby, Steve?
Yes.
Career earnings for the trainers? $1.2 billion. How's that for you?
Unbelievable. That's that's unbelievable.
For Asmussen, Mandela, Baffert, and who am I missing?
Wow.
The other one.
Wow.
There's the top 5. I added it up, went to Equibase and looked, and I don't even know if that includes Dubai on the Equibase table. I think it does. So $1.2 billion in earnings from the top 5 in the Arkansas Derby. I mean, those are the Masters lining up there. It doesn't get any bigger than that.
That is pretty. That's an amazing number. You wouldn't even think. Mott was the other one. Yeah,
Mott was the other one. Right.
Mott was the other one.
I just forgot Bill Mott, who's like number 4 on the all-time or 5 on the all-time earnings list, something like that. But yeah, I think Mandela might have been the low guy on the totem pole on the all-time earnings list out of that group. And we're in the hundreds of millions with those guys we're talking about. But unbelievable. But
$1.2
billion. I added it up a couple times to make sure because I was like, these
that's
guys are
great.
Impressive. You know, my initial note was like, hey, these guys are all like Hall of Famers, And I'm like, well, they're more than Hall of Famers. I mean, they're Hall of Famers that haven't put together this kind of accrued money. And so that just goes to show the depth of that race, just a phenomenal group there that ran 1 through 5. And,
amazing.
Steve was laughing Fox.
The
top 4 in that race are all really nice horses. Galilean for Hollendorfer is a nice horse, too.
He's
going to win some good stuff.
He had trouble.
He's going to win some good races. There's no doubt.
Yeah, and then he got kind of I think it was Galilean that had a little bit of a got shuffled back a little, but here's what we'll do: we're going to be together obviously as we get ready for the Express Bet Kentucky Derby wagering guide and countdown to the crown. More or less now in maintenance mode and evaluation mode. So we'll check in leading up to Derby, Jeremy. I appreciate it.
Look forward to it, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Jeremy Blanc, everybody, horseplayernow.com, and countdown to the crown. I want to thank Jeremy and Bill Downs, Indiana Grand, 2:15 starts today. Rudy Brissett, Andy Serling, Brad Cox, Brian Lynch saying goodbye to Heart, and you got a real insight into Horseman. He didn't want to see Heart to Heart get on the van. Tells you all you need to know. Very hard to come back to your barn and that big horse in the first stall not there anymore. You just work to get another one. Some people are working to just have one in their whole career. Enjoy the day. Obviously, Indiana Grand, the big focus. I still haven't thanked Mikey Farrow and Patty for our win Sunday at Parks with just enough hope. Talk to you tomorrow.